that?
Tui and applesauce. Three words for that. Ooh, blah, and blah. When I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. Oh, it's gangbusters.
Damn a shake in FL. In FL and Dave. Damn a shake.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Damashek. What's going down? Hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to episode number 64 of the Dave Damashek football program. Available, as always, on iTunes. And seated to my immediate right, ready to talk about the NFL draft that is coming up in just a couple of days now, my old pal from NFL.com, Adam Rank. What's the poop, fella?
Hey, boss. Thanks for having me. Are you excited for the draft?
I am. It's funny. As you can see by my bronzy glow, I just returned from Hawaii, and now I'm about to get on a plane and go to New York City. It's kind of like I've experienced the two bookends of the NFL season, and I'm going to be doing my own personal version of that, the Pro Bowl trip to Hawaii, and then the getting ready for next season with a trip to New York City for the draft. Yeah, and by the way, to promote what you just did, a fine thing, the in your pick six column, the best drafts ever.
It's first round draft. We limited first round drafts ever. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
So did you agree with that? Did you agree that 83 was better than 89?
Yeah, I think 83 is the best one. I mean, it's hard to argue with that. I know people then focus on the busts. That's how you can pick it apart, is by saying, well, Todd Blackledge stunk. Mm-hmm. But, of course, then you have Marino at the back end who falls all the way down to 27. You know what's funny about that? People always ask me about Danny Marino because he went to Pitt. And my old man was a team physician for the Pitt Panthers. And I remember in 1983 him taking a number of phone calls from NFL teams checking in, because I remember there was all the mystery around Dan Marino. Why is he falling? What's going on here? Why did his senior season not go so well? Is there something nefarious going on in this young man's life? Mm-hmm. And so my father had to answer those questions. I remember that. And he plummeted all the way down to number 27 there. The Steelers, a lot of people thought in Pittsburgh, in hindsight, 2020 hindsight only.
Right.
Pittsburghers, because he was a high school kid there, then went to Pitt, of course. People now look back and say, why didn't the Steelers take him at 27? They instead took the star-crossed Gabe Rivera, the defensive tackle out of Texas Tech, who after his rookie season, his promising rookie season, went through a windshield. I think he was drinking and driving, as a matter of fact, never played again. And so people always ask that, but that's the way the NFL draft goes, and I'm looking forward to talking about it with one of the gurus of the last, 40 or 50 years, Charlie Casserly. He's going to be joining us here in Studio 66 in just a second here. But, of course, the answer to that question is that to that mystery is that the Steelers had just taken Mark Malone with a first-round draft pick. That's my first question for him. What is the story? You know, back, this is 1980-ish when the Steelers take the Arizona State QB Mark Malone. And they had previously had Cliff Stout in the pipeline, who they thought was the heir apparent to Terry Bradshaw. What is the – that's the question for Charlie Casserly. Question number one.
Issue number one?
Yeah, do it like that.
Issue number one.
Yeah, like what's his name? McIntyre?
McLaughlin.
I don't know what it is.
Come on.
That old man. It's your great character. McRanklin.
Issue number one.
From the Fantasy Show on NFL Fantasy Live come football season. It's Rank's chief impression. But anyway, the question is – these people, maybe in 1980 there was room for error, but with the obsession, not just among GM and personnel guys, it's now bled into the media, and now everyone in the country has an opinion on the NFL draft. Everyone feels like we all feel pretty well informed about who needs to be taken, what his skill set is. We use words like ball skills, you know, you can be having a barroom debate like, I love his ball skills. A lot of talk about that. So how is it possible that people continue to blunder when it comes to making first round draft picks with QBs? What is the common thread, Charlie Casserly? I shall say to him.
You shall say to him, yes.
Yeah, I shall say to him, what is it with Heath Shuler, who he drafted, Jamarcus Russell, Ryan Leaf, Mark Malone and all these guys. How do you use a first-round draft pick on guys like this? And then they just are abject failures. We didn't realize he could only throw the ball 12 yards. Or like, he's a dimwit. We had no idea. I wonder if I'll have an answer to that.
Wouldn't it be like the real-life equivalent of somebody still dying from a cold? Like, we've advanced so far in medicine, but yet somebody still died of a toothache.
Yeah, it's one of those things for me.
How did we not... Because it was weird, because when I started to look back at the pick six and started going through some of these drafts and looking at who had, you know, round ones that were really good, round ones that were really bad, and one of them that made the list, I'm thinking back, I think it was 73, where they had 26 teams, 15 of the players who were drafted went on to play in an all-star game of some sort. Actually, it would have been the Pro Bowl because the two leagues were combined by then. So 15 guys out of 26 went on to go to the Pro Bowl, which is a pretty good...
That
pretty
sounds good.
That's a pretty good percentage. But why isn't that higher now?
It like should
you would
be,
figure,
right.
They see so much tape. I mean, it's not... There's no more obscure guys. It just doesn't seem possible that these guys just can't nail it. And not that, you know, and if you don't get a Hall of Famer, that's fine. But just being able to get a guy who's good, who's a good role player or anything like that. And you see... Like when the Raiders took Gallery and you looked at all the good guys that went before, sandwiched around him in 2004, you had Eli Manning, of course, going number one, Larry Fitzgerald at number three, Rivers went four, and they were flip-flop when they were traded. Ben Roethlisberger went a little bit later. Vince Wilfork was in that draft. You look at it, how did they miss so badly on a guy when all this tape is available? You watch the guys
it's
play.
It's true. You know. I've said this, I've made this analogy many times. There are certain things in life that they continue to improve upon. Other mm-hmm. things, there's just been some sort of a decision made. Good enough. We can move on to the next issue. For instance, the other day I'm having breakfast, and they bring over, I order some bacon, and they bring over thick cut. And now thick cut bacon is the way. You know, mm-hmm. thick cut bacon is delicious. The first 30 years of my life, it never once passed my lips. Thick cut bacon wasn't an option. When you order bacon, it was the skinny. Now, if they don't serve thick cut, shame on them because it's delicious. They continue to progress. I was fine with old bacon.
Right.
But now that they're thick cutting it, even better.
You know, I don't know. Thick cut, too much.
Don't start with me about that. That's not something I'm interested in. I like to have fun and talk about things, but that's how could you defend thin cut bacon over thick cut? It's more. It's bacon, but more.
Yeah, but it's a little too much.
I don't know that I even know what you're talking about there. Now, conversely,
you lose a little bit.
They're coffee lids, mobile mm-hmm. coffee lids, like you know that you get at Starbucks to go with your coffee so you can drive with it. It's got that little peephole thing.
Yes.
Well, that's not satisfying. That's no way to enjoy your coffee. It doesn't drink well. Plus, it also splashes out. That they invented that lid in about 1982, and they're like, yeah, good enough. We never have to improve upon that. Says who? You know what I'm saying? Here he comes. Maybe he'll have an opinion on this, but maybe we'll focus on the NFL draft coming up and some drafts from the past. It's the great Charlie Casserly. He's sitting down. He's getting his headphones on. Black tie. Help him out. Get those headphones on there. We all set there? How are you, Charlie Casserly?
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm well, and I'm excited.
And I know nothing about coffee tops, but go ahead. This morning.
I know nothing about NFL football. That doesn't stop me from flapping my gums about it each and every week.
Oh, okay. All right.
So how are you, sir? Thank you for joining us.
Great to be here.
First question, we were just saying this. What we're talking about is, and I won't explain how we got to this point, but what we were talking about is the inability in 2012 to when obviously the careers like yours are devoted to evaluating these kids and, the so-called can't miss prospects and with this being a quarterback league, the obsession and the poring over every particular detail with these guys. How is it possible? And you drafted Heath Shuler, famously or infamously, and you know there's but of course you're not alone in that. There's Ryan Leaf, Jamarcus Russell, Andre Ware. The list goes on and on. What is it? What is there a common thread among these guys that as you look back and you say, that's the thing that they lacked? What is it that makes these guys people who we all feel like, yeah, we got to take this guy, and then they just flame out?
You're talking about quarterbacks now?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if there's any one single thing because each one's an individual situation. I think one thing that may be a common thread if you went and looked at these is sometimes the team they go to. Has a lot of issues. In other words, how good is that team? And some of these quarterbacks that succeed go into a team where they don't have to play right away. Aaron Rodgers didn't have to play for 3 years. Okay, Joe Flacco goes into a team with a tremendous defense, runs the ball well. Don't ask him to do a lot of things. Yes, he has a good record, but if you go back and look, how many plays did he really have to make? If another player had went in there, went with that team, could he have developed and improved the way Joe Flacco has improved? So one common thread I think is there is these players have gone with teams that weren't real good and weren't able to overcome that. You know, maybe the poster boy when I came into this league was Archie Manning. Mm-hmm. He went to the Saints, and here was a guy, you know, how good could he be? And he never really got a chance to show how good he could be. Jim Plunkett. Jim Plunkett was waived by the New England mm-hmm. Patriots, a failure, and he's in Oakland and wins a Super Bowl.
Is there a guy, well, the name that jumps into my mind when you're talking about a guy like Jim Plunkett, success late in his career, and then obviously you were there to watch Joe Theismann, you know, after he finds his way through the CFL and then lands and obviously becomes a Super Bowl champion. Is a guy like Brady Quinn, do you hold out optimism that a guy like that or Matt Leinart may, you know, still resurrect and still have a relevant career as a starting QB?
Well, I think with Quinn, he did show some good things in preseason last year with Denver, so there was a positive there. Quinn's issue was accuracy coming out. That was a question. Now, you're going to say, wait a minute, quarterback's not accurate. What are you taking a guy that's not accurate for? Well, he was accurate a lot of times, and he was a smart guy and knew where to throw the ball. But there would be key throws that he would miss in a game they would be inaccurate on. So it's an area that he really, to me, never improved upon. I didn't see enough of him in training camp last year to say how much he got better, but people that saw him said he did have a good camp. So as far as Matt Leinart goes, you know, Leinart's work habits weren't what they needed to be when he came into the league, but he corrected that. You know, if you ask Houston, they'll tell you that he worked real hard there. He's not a big-armed guy, and when you're not a big-armed guy, accuracy is crucial, decision-making and getting it out quick are crucial. His accuracy isn't top flight. So there were some things in there that, you know, you bet on the come with him. You think he'll be okay, but you see some red lights. All these players have something there where there's a caution. Some of them overcome it. Some of them don't overcome it. He didn't overcome. In Leinart's case, I would say accuracy and top arm and not having the top arm.
And when you think of guys who fall into that category, Colt McCoy is another guy that they talk about. Cleveland has a pretty interesting dilemma here in the draft because they could go a number of different ways. They could go with Trent Richardson. They could go to with Justin Blackmon. Or, you know, they can go up for Tannehill. When you look at what they've got, would Cleveland be better served to start surrounding Colt McCoy with some weapons and see what he could do? Or what would you do if you were calling the shots there?
Well, let's go back to what they have done up to this point. They tried to trade for Griffin/Luck. I mean, everybody, I'm sure, made an inquiry to Indianapolis, and that went nowhere. But they tried to get Griffin. So they tried to get what they felt was an elite quarterback. It didn't work out. If I'm there, then I'm not going to take Tannehill at 4. I'm going to take the best player on the board, which to me is Richardson. And, you know, you could have a discussion about him because the position, not devaluing it, it's the question of, is it an injury-prone position, and do I take Blackmon? Well, I would still take Richardson because he's the best player on the board, and I'm not going to assume he's going to get hurt. Mm-hmm. As long as my medical people are. So I would surround him with better talent. If there's a quarterback that's a better prospect than the next guy on the board, whatever round it is, then I go ahead and take him. But without an elite guy, I'd make a better team around him because you may be back in his boat next year trying to look at a quarterback again. At least you'll be a better football team.
I got to say, I think Trent Richardson, you talk about the devaluing of the position in general, obviously. All we've heard about for the last couple of years is this is a quarterback league, and then obviously the teams that have been successful are largely will bear out the fact that you don't need a premier rusher to get to a Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl. So first of all that, but then particular to Cleveland's situation, they're in a division. You know you can bank on the fact that the Steelers are going to stuff the run, and with Haloti Ngata, you know that the Ravens are going to do the same thing. It seems like a losing proposition. To me, I'm no Browns fan, but I certainly would rather see them. Tannehill is, to me, is the Mike Mamula of QBs at this point. You know, a guy who suddenly has risen to be a guy who's, you know, in a lot of books, a can't-miss guy. I have questions about him, but to me, it's Justin Blackmon. Give Colt McCoy or whomever is under center there a fighting chance. He hasn't had a wide receiver in his couple of years there.
Now, you make a good point about the division they're in. And that it's going to be a division that's going to be hard to run the ball. But this isn't a one-player draft now. They're going to have opportunities to pick players at other positions. And so getting a wide receiver in this draft, I think, is something that they'll end up doing. And they need speed is what they need. Little is a good player. He's not necessarily a fast guy. But they need a speed receiver to threaten it. So I think that might be something you might get in another pick.
And they do have a chance at number 22. They can take Kendall Wright. They can go Stephen Hill. It seems like there'll be a number of options. Where it really gets interesting is back in the second round, where Brandon Weeden could be available. Are people making too big of a deal about his age? What would you do with somebody like him?
No, I don't think so, because you know he's going to be 29. It's going to take you a year or two before he hits stride. So now he's 30, 31, and now you're talking about, you know, his next contract. Let's say in 4 years, so he's 33. What are you going to do at that point in time? And again, he's a guy that is, you're going to have to make a transition from the spread offense to the NFL. I like him. I think he's a better player right now than Tannehill. I think the guy is an accurate passer. I think he makes good decisions. He's not real mobile. He can be a little bit streaky, but he has a nice touch on the deep ball. So he does some good things. I've thought about it a lot. Because, you know, having been in that decision, never was faced with one like that. I think I would devalue him, and then there would be a point on the board. You're going to say he's better than the next guy. We're going to take him. But I don't see that, obviously, in the first round.
Well, by the way, let's backtrack for a second here. You mentioned the Houston Texans, and in a world in which I walk these very halls, this will stun you, Charlie Casserly, and maybe upset you.
What, that you walk? I don't know. So.
I really soar. That's really
oh,
what I
soar.
Do.
Oh, soar. Okay,
you should
excuse
see
me.
I was over at the Combine. You should see what I can do. For the people at the NFL Network, I brought up the name a few months ago. I mentioned Rocky Blyer in passing, and people said, I don't know who Rocky Blyer is.
Oh, my gosh.
People under the age of 30, it's a different generation now. Yeah. If they didn't see somebody play, they weren't alive for him, he doesn't matter. So this is the world we live in. So with all due respect, Charlie Casserly, of course, a Super Bowl champion is with the Washington Redskins, came up under Bobby Beathard, started out with George Allen back in the mid-70s there. Then you moved on when the Houston Texans started out, and you drafted David Carr, and then famously and controversially at the time, I thought that I couldn't believe Mario Williams when you had Vince Young, the in-state national champion with the Texas Longhorns, and then Reggie Bush, who was electric, and you figured he'll figure out how to use him. You know, when he gets into camp. In the meantime, though, he's going to be a dynamite NFL player. Mario Williams, vindicated now all these years later that you clearly made the right choice on Mario.
I never looked at it that way, to be honest with you. You make a decision, you go on, and you move on. And you don't worry about what other people think. I felt bad for Mario, though, because there was no reason for him to take any grief. In fact, I said in Houston, I said famously, if you want to boo somebody, boo me. And they did. They took me literally, see? So, I felt good for Mario, because here was a kid who came in, got criticized for no reason, was injured his rookie year, didn't play all that bad, played the run well. But, you know, the guy couldn't practice. He was hurt. Then year two and year three, I mean, you got this guy's a Pro Bowl player. He kept his mouth shut through the whole thing. And I don't think the people ever there, they acknowledged he was good because you had to after a while. But I don't think they ever warmed to him, because there's still an undercurrent there about Vince Young and Reggie Bush. Believe it or not.
It's
amazing. Yeah.
Well, I mean, based on what you said when we started out here.
They follow the NFL, right?
Well, I do think it is situational. I always think about that as a guy like Steve Kerr, to make an NBA analogy. Yeah. I think if Steve Kerr would have landed in the wrong spot, he would have flamed out and you know, had a 2 or 3 year NBA career. But if you get yourself in the right spot and you can be a two-dimensional guy, if you have the luxury of being two-dimensional on the right team, I think you can get away with that. But people in Houston think Vince Young, well, this would have been a better spot for him. He would have thrived. That seems loco.
I don't think now, because he couldn't. But I'm just telling you, there is not the feeling with Mario that you would think that there would be. Okay, there's still a little bit of that undercurrent on the thing.
Hmm.
So,
well,
majority, but it's there. And well, I based on interviews I've done. That's why.
What about the Houston Texans? Now, it's guess is that they're going to be along with the Patriots, the favorite to get to the Super Bowl out of the AFC. First of all, is there for you a sense of pride, or are you disconnected from the franchise at this point? Do you agree with those people who are going to project that the Texans are the team to beat?
Well, I'm happy for the success. You know, in this job, you're neutral. I root for certain players, you know, ones that I know or I drafted or traded for or whatever. And I want to see them do well because, you know, I know them. See, as far as the co-favorite thing, yeah, when you come out with, if you just go back to the playoffs and you say to yourself, okay, if you had Matt Schaub and you had Mario Williams and you had those guys, heck, and you're in the playoffs, you're liable to win this thing. So,
they should have won that game in Baltimore.
Well, they're playing with a third string quarterback who's a rookie. So, and they played well, and that's a positive for them. It's a credit to the coaching staff, the scouting staff, everybody there. They should be proud of that. Williams only played five games. Now, in the five games he was there, he was tied for the AFC lead in sacks, but the reality is they made the playoffs without him. Mm-hmm. Schaub, they finished the season stumbling along to make the playoffs. They need Schaub, clearly. Winston at right tackle. I mean, all of a sudden, in D'Amico Ryans, you're losing some players now. It's not the same team. You got to see how they react to that. So I think that this isn't the same team that ended the season. So I think you have to take a step back and see what they get in the draft. They couldn't participate in free agency because they didn't have any money. So I'm not so sure that they step out away from everybody as much as they did then. So I think you got Baltimore in there. Pittsburgh is always going to be in that mix, too.
Well, I think that like Rank there alludes to, I think that between Stephen Hill or Kendall Wright or one of those guys, if you put that guy on the other side of Andre Johnson, now you're cooking with gas. The question is, if you're a Texans fan, do you think Matt Schaub is a potentially Super Bowl winning QB?
I don't think Schaub. To me, Schaub is I don't want to say he's not in the top 10 of the league because we've got to go through all the names.
Right.
But there's a good group of a quarterback, 8 to 10 in this league, that are better than him. And he's kind of in that next echelon. I think he is a guy that's smart. I think he knows that system. He executes it to a T. I think Kubiak's a brilliant designer and play caller. I think it's a great match for him. But to make the big-time throws in big games consistently, I think he's got to prove he can still do that. Plus, he's got to stay healthy.
What about in the NFC? Who do you like coming out of there? Do the 49ers, now they were in the mix for Peyton Manning. They're going to go with Alex Smith. Should they be trying to upgrade still? Should they look? I don't know if there's anybody out there and if there's any better options, but how are they looking for next year?
Oh, I know. I think they're terrific. I think the defense is the best in the NFC, if not the best in the NFL. So I think the defense is really, really good. No question. They can stop the run. They can rush the passer. They play hard. They play physical. So that's real good. Now, offensively, they've got to get a little bit more juice. And should they have go for a better quarterback? Yeah, obviously, they went for Peyton Manning. Mm-hmm. But they don't feel that there are a lot of guys that they – first of all, who are you going to get that's available? The people just don't fall out of trees now. So they're kind of limited in what they have. Now, Smith, be interesting how much Smith improves this year, second year in a system with a coach who's terrific in Harbaugh. So I think we'll be seeing about that. Now, Gore, I think we might be getting towards the end part of the career now. How much more mileage can they get out of Gore? Now, Brandon Jacobs, same thing. You're not sure what you're going to get with Brandon Jacobs at this point in his career. So I talked about on the path to the draft here, I wouldn't be surprised to take a running back at that point. I mean, that's a position that could help them. Long-term, certainly it could help them. So, Moss, I don't know what you're going to get out of Randy Moss. That's a total wild card there. You may not get much of anything out of him. So speed at receiver is certainly – Manningham helps him. There's no question about it. Now, I think they're a team that will contend. I think Harbaugh is a tremendous football coach. He's proven that at Stanford. He's proven it. Here he proved it at San Diego University along with the 49ers. So they're a team that should be there at the end. I think they're more legit than not because of the defense.
Well, and that division, by the way, much tougher than it was a season ago. Seattle on the rise. I think the Rams will be at least better than they were last year. So yeah, that'll be an interesting division. And your old division, the NFC East, ought to be as compelling as any it is most seasons, but this year in particular. Can Romo finally win? Giants coming out of it, and now Robert Griffin III. So it goes Luck, Robert Griffin III certainly to the Redskins. After that, though, the Vikings, everybody had Matt Khalil locked in there, and that's been for 3 months at minimum that that was the assumed guy to go in there at left tackle. Is this born of, because of some of the stuff I've read just in the last couple of days, is that philosophically that the league has sort of determined that, you know, QB, and then you really need a shutdown corner or a left tackle. It really comes down to that. What does a team need more? Is a dynamite corner or the left tackle? Is that what this is about, or is it? Or do you think it's more about the individuals, that it's Matt Khalil versus Morris Claiborne, that Claiborne maybe just grades higher or projects higher?
It should start and end with the individual, because if you start valuing the position, then subconsciously you overrate the player. And all of us who have been in this will come back and say, take the best player available. Why? Because subconsciously, we've overrated players, and that's where our mistakes have come. So it starts with the player. In Minnesota's case, to me, they need a left tackle more than they need a corner. A lot more. So they've got to take Khalil there, I think. I know they're raising the question about these other players. They're doing that to see if they can get a market to trade back, and I think still take Khalil.
And but do you, like we were talking about with Richardson a minute ago, do you think if you're the Vikings, are you thinking, listen, we've got Calvin Johnson in this division, we've got all those great Packers receivers, we've got to do something to curb that a little bit. Is that the part of the calculation, or is that something you don't try to?
No, absolutely. You have that discussion. But I think two things. It comes back to who's the better player in your eyes. But also, if you have them all rated there together, then you got to look at where you are as a football team. And then you got to look at what you can get in the second round. And I don't think you can count on getting a left tackle in the second round. I think if you got one there, you got to take one there.
Well, let me ask you, you know, you talk about the subconscious evaluations and how you move guys up in the draft. I assume that's what's happening with Tannehill. We've been talking about that the last couple of weeks, that's the cause of it. Well, we have to get a franchise QB. That doesn't mean that Tannehill is that. You just want to, you would like him to be that. Along those lines, then, is Ponder, was that a reach? I mean, it certainly seems like that was a reach at 12. I think it was 12 last year that they grabbed him. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's a year or two from now the Vikings are going to be looking for another QB?
I don't know that we can say that. It was definitely a reach. And that wasn't subconscious. That was conscious. And so is Tannehill. That's conscious, too. The reality is you may talk yourself into what you're doing there, but you know you didn't have them rated there at the beginning of the process.
Mm-hmm. Does the new rules with the salary cap, does that change a little bit of the thinking, too? Because now a team up near the top, they're not going to have to invest as much money. Miami's not going to have to spend as much money if they're the ones that end up with Tannehill. Does that change the thinking a little bit?
You know, I don't think it does. I haven't asked anybody specifically that, but I still think it comes down to how you rate the players and how good you think they're going to be, and that's going to ultimately determine who you're going to pick, because if you get it right, you've solved the problem. If you don't get it right, you haven't solved the problem, and you got to try to solve it again. So I think it's easier to get out of a mistake now. That's really what's different.
Go back to the left tackle position, and in general, here's the biggest disconnect, as far as I'm concerned, between true insiders and people like myself and the 99% of people who obsessively watch football, is evaluating offensive lines. At the end of the day, I can say, at the end of the game, I can say, well, they didn't, you know, the QB is clean, and the team rushed for 200 yards, ergo, the offensive line had a good day. But this evaluation of individuals seems just about impossible. And as a matter of fact, I would go so far as to say many so-called experts weigh in on this without the ability. Watching a game, do you, as an evaluator, are you able to just look at a game with the naked eye and say, wow, that left guard is dominant? Boy, he's way better, because to me, well, he's a 300-pound big guy. How much difference can they possibly be? He lifts a lot of weights. He put, you know, how can one guy who is 300 pounds be that much better? I know that seems like a foolish question, but I really think that most of us have no idea how to look at that.
Well, to answer a couple of your questions there, first of all, You can't learn anything watching television, so just drop that, okay? You can't.
I disagree. I was raised on TV. Well, everything I know was in.
Can't evaluate players on television.
Okay,
so let me rephrase the question, okay? You have to use coaching tape, which gives you the perspective of the whole field, and you're able to go back and run it over and over again in slow motion, stop it to try to really see what's happening there, okay? So that's number one. Number two, in evaluating a player, when a team evaluates a player, and this is what I'm used to doing. You know, first of all, when you sit in a room, you got a bunch of people that have looked at him. You got 5-6 people have seen this guy. So you got different eyes, different viewpoints. You've seen him at different points in the season. Why is that important? Well, maybe the games he saw, games you played early, maybe he was injured in. Maybe he was not playing good people in those games. I've seen him practice. I've seen him compete in practice. I've seen how he handles coaching. I've seen him in drills. I've interviewed him. I've worked him out. We've given him a psychological test. We've given him an intelligence test. There's a volume of information that you get that before you make that decision, which is huge. And all of it you need. Okay? So that gets back to watching one game. No, it's not as simple as watching one game. The guy could have a good game. Maybe have a bad game. So you got to look at a volume of stuff. Then as far as you got one 300-pounder and another. Well, you've got quickness, athletic ability, agility, ability to move his feet, balance, explosion, intelligence. Okay, all those things enter into it. Okay, it's the same principle as basketball. I got a 7-footer and I got a 7-footer. Well, how come that 7-footer isn't Will Chamberlain and how come that 7-footer isn't Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? Well, guess what? They're not. Okay,
well, it's the same thing. Is the difference in tight quarters and everything. It seems to me that in pass protection,
they're not so tight when a guy off on the other side is pretty good.
But what? Okay. But you sit there and you talk about this mountain of information. You have a team of experts who are dissecting this in so many different ways that they've never done before. How do we still miss on guys? How do we still?
It's real simple. Humans evaluating humans. You're errant on both sides of the equation. That's what happens.
But you have a guy like Blaine Gabbert. Like, obviously, there's been a lot of problems that have been raised about him where they talk about, you know, he's fearful in the pocket and he has all these deficiencies. How did they not see that when they were going through?
Here's the way you look at it, okay? When I evaluated Gabbert, I saw a guy that was athletic, had a good arm, could make big-time throws, okay? Illinois game specifically, he makes some big-time throws there, okay? When I'm watching him, there's three things that I see. I see a guy that kind of looks down at the rush. I see some of that. I see a guy that has people wide open and doesn't throw to him. So I saw that. And a guy who wasn't always accurate deep. And you go, my God, that's terrible. Well, guess what? I saw him do all those things in the tape, too, positively. But I saw I saw it creep up more than a couple times, those three things. Okay, so now, can he overcome those things? All right, there's a lot more positives than negatives, but you saw some red lights. The deep throw, that I saw incorrect technique there. I saw a guy that could improve in technique throwing the ball on the deep one. Why doesn't he throw to a guy when I'm looking at him, he's open? Well, I got to sit with him and find that out. I can't do that. I got to find that out. You know, the guy's young in his experience. He's still growing. He sees the rush. I don't like that now. But there's other times I see him stand in there and take a hit. So is that something that, you know, is he going to grow out of? Is that a major problem? I don't know that. It all becomes magnified when you get to the NFL. You can take the best prospect in the world, and he still has questions about him. Okay? So he has less questions, but where do those questions end up? That's why it's humans evaluating humans. That's where you have the human element of a person that doesn't take the next step, if you will. So
here's a question about, you know, QBs who feel the rush. And to me, the greatest determiner of, if that's a word, determiner, is...
It is on this show.
All right, fair enough. Is for a quarterback success above all else, receivers, the coach that he's got, everything else, is the quality of the offensive line. With the exception of Aaron Rodgers, probably, and Ben Roethlisberger, who consistently has been able to thrive behind a lousy offensive line, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning have had the luxury of being behind offensive lines to keep them clean. Now, I know that they make quick reads and get rid of it.
But Manning, the last couple of years, that offensive line, you know, when Peyton Manning wasn't in there, that quarterback was getting... Peyton Manning was a guy that could make an offensive line good. He did have some good players at one point. There's no question. Mm-hmm. Last couple of years wasn't quite as good. He still got rid of the ball.
Yeah, and
but even go ahead to your point.
Even in the midst of that season, they were all over him, and he had a couple of really rough games in a row there. With Matt Light going out, is that now – it's very quiet that Matt Light, the longtime left tackle there for the Patriots. Is that a real problem for them, or are they so loaded with picks and Nate Solder's ready to step up? Or is that going to be a potential big-time problem for Tom Brady, who has always enjoyed great protection?
Well, I think that Solder, I think, is a good player. I think Solder can come in, and Solder can play left tackle. Now, Vollmer's a guy who's played right tackle, but he's got some injuries, so they kind of need him to come back. You don't want to be losing two tackles. But if Vollmer comes back, Soldier's in there, they got a tremendous offensive line coach in Dante Scarnecchi, absolutely brilliant coach, who's always made that group better than the individuals. And then with Brady, you know, him getting rid of the ball, I think they'll be fine as long as Vollmer is healthy and Soldier's healthy. I think they'll be fine.
All right, excellent. Great stuff, Charlie Casserly. Thank you for coming in here and tolerating our foolishness. And I know it's your busy time of the year. Like accountants right now, that just ended last week. And now this is your busy season.
Well, so. We're accounting too, so anyway.
Thank you very much. Guys. We'll see you in the hallways. Thanks, appreciate it. There he goes, the great Charlie Casserly with some good stuff. Do you see what I'm talking about, Rank? Be well. See, we didn't even get to talk coffee lids with him. Oh. We'll do that next time.
See, we can do that after the draft. You'll have time to do that.
So, all right. So it's interesting. He sticks with the Matt Khalil pick there at number three for the Vikings. To me, because of what I said, I go Morris Claiborne there,
right?
The corner out of LSU because of the division he's in. Don't you feel like they're now Brandon Marshall with the Bears? You need some. That's six games.
Yeah, but what are you?
That's more than a third of your season is going up against Calvin Johnson, Brandon Marshall, and all those Packers wide receivers.
But what he's saying is that it's a little bit deeper where you can find the cornerbacks later in the draft. What if Janoris Jenkins, like, for instance, if he drops down in the draft, then maybe in the second round you take a risk on him because of all of his talent and everything. You're not going to find a guy like Khalil later in the draft. You put him there, it seems like a kind of a thing where you rubber stamp this guy 10 to 12, 10 to 15 years. He's going to dominate there. He's going to be like Joe Thomas, and then he's going to ride it out.
The question I should have asked him before he got out of here was this one. And this is why I would take Claiborne, and that we were all around this with him just now. Is it seems like corner is probably the easiest position to evaluate, or in the top two or three easiest to evaluate. Mm-hmm. Is the guy really fast? Is he big? You know, and based on his body of work,
as much as
college teams now throw the ball, you have ample tape to see what he does, against good wide receivers and good quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Seems like, yeah, that came out of the SEC. Been playing good teams every week for the last couple of years.
Yeah, but I think he just proved that it's probably easier to get these guys later in the draft because now everybody's doing it. It's like going to L.A. and finding a stand-up comic or an actor. You know, everybody's doing it. It's not going to be hard to find one.
That's a good point. So, all right, so we go. So let's just start to blow through it here. I also don't take Trent Richardson if I'm the Browns for exactly the reasons I said.
See, but I don't think that Justin Blackmon is the guaranteed showstopper that everybody's predicting him to be.
No, I think people are cooling on him a little bit, but I still would take him.
But you can go down later in the draft. There's nothing that says that Kendall Wright's not going to be a better player, that Stephen Hill can't be a better player. What about Jeffries from South Carolina? There's another guy who could come out and have a similar type of career than Justin Blackmon.
So what good is Chris Johnson rushes for 2,000 yards. What value did that have to the Titans? You know? I mean, the teams that are good in the NFL, for the most part, don't have great running backs. So that's based on the easiest
way for these teams to get better is good defense. And the Browns have a good defense. They were in the top 10 last year. And you know what? Maybe that's a team you put Morris Claiborne on the other side of Joe Hayden. Now you have two dominant corners, and you could go that route. But when you have Trent Richardson, if you can shorten the game, if you have a guy who can move the sticks,
but against
shorten
Pittsburgh
the game,
and Baltimore, that's why Peyton it's
Hillis,
another thing.
But Peyton Hillis had good games against them in his breakout year in 2010. It's not to say that you cannot rush on these guys. They're not the 86 Bears, you know. And they're good defenses. They're going to be strong every year.
Like he went 86, which was the better, superior
was
defense.
Superior
85,
D, yes.
Good for you.
So you're going to be – it's not impossible to run against these teams. And if you can shorten games, keep your defense keeps you in it. You can shorten games. You don't put too much pressure on Colt McCoy to go out there and win games on his own. Now you have a little bit of a better chance to go out and win. Because the Browns are going in the right direction. So they remind me a lot of the way the the Jets were winning early in Mark Sanchez's career, which actually was only a couple of years ago. They had good defense. They were able to run the ball. If the Browns can emulate that, they will be in contention for the AFC North. Well, probably not in contention. Maybe a wild card.
All right, what do you do if you're the Buccaneers then?
Well, if the Browns are going to take Richardson, then you go with Claiborne and you put him.
No, but if the Vikings take Claiborne, which I bet you they're going to do.
I really think that's going to happen?
I do believe that that's the way they're going to go. Because exactly what I've been, you know, I'll say it again. The division they're in. They need that. That is a need. That's something that is not something that's negotiable. And by the way, I hear what Casserly was just talking about. But if you're the Vikings and you're in the personnel department, they haven't had a good cornerback in forever. You know, mm-hmm. this is like bad goalies for the Philadelphia Phillies kind of thing. Philadelphia Flyers, I mean, who just beat my Penguins.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Don't throw it in my face. I stumbled into that, and I don't like
you
it.
You stumbled into it.
My goalie was even worse.
Yes.
I'm sick about it.
Now, when they won that game, it was 3-0 and then it was 3-1, mm-hmm. What was your mindset? Where you're like, you know what? It's happened in 2010. Could we see a little rally, a comeback? Were you expecting anything?
What I didn't anticipate was both Geno Malkin and Sidney Crosby being outplayed by Claude Giroux. That's what mm-hmm. it came down to. You know, Claude Giroux was gangbusters, and maybe I wouldn't be surprised if we hear that Crosby was a little bit banged up or something like that. You know, because he collided with Malkin and didn't seem right the rest of the way from there. I don't want to talk about that though. Disgusted about it. I'm sick about it.
Well, you're the one who drew the analogy.
I did, and I'm sorry and sick about it, and I don't want to talk about it. And you know what? I say to the NHL, go spit, because now you got a great what iconic matchups you have awaiting you in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Enjoy.
By the way, I just realized
Nashville.
Now
great
Kings,
fun. Phoenix.
Stop it.
Wow, this is going to be a lot of fun.
Oh,
diehard Puck fans are going to love those matchups.
Oh, quit with the sour
grapes.
Disgusting. It's not becoming a
I'll tell you what. I don't like the Rangers, and I don't like the Flyers, but if the Rangers don't win this next one, boy, those playoffs are really going to stink.
are they? The Kings are in it. It can't be too bad.
I don't care, and I don't want to talk about it.
Why is it, though, and forgive me, because the Kings haven't been in this position where it really mattered. The reseeding in the playoffs has to stop.
Why?
That's a terrible idea. Why should the Kings have to go play the number two seed?
Why should
now?
You be allowed to fluke your way into
another
round?
Well, it's not a
round.
Fluke. You beat the number one seed. You beat the President's Cup winner. You should be able to go on and play the next opponent
and not have to worry about
playing number two.
If my team over the course of the regular season was demonstratively better than yours, then there should be some advantage there.
No.
And home ice ain't enough to do it.
That's not enough. Now, why should St. Louis have to play a team that's got a guy like Jonathan Quick at goal? Is that an advantage for them? No. But it's ridiculous. I don't like, should they do that in football? Do you think they should reseed after the first round?
Wait a second. They do reseed.
No, they don't.
Wait a second. Wait, a black tie, way in here. Wait, let me think about this. I get confused.
I guess they do because the number
yes,
one
they
seed,
do.
The
yeah,
number
of course
one seed gets a bye. Well,
of course they reseed. What are you talking about now that I think about it? Yes, they reseed. Yeah.
No, they don't.
Well, it's different. No. Well, does the NBA do it that way too?
No.
The lesser team, the whoever.
Okay, because
of course
the
they
one,
yes, of course
yes,
they
he's
reseed.
Right, he's right. The
number I am one, right. Yeah. Now you made me feel crazy.
No.
Two
the number
dopes.
The number one seed gets
me,
a bye.
Ganging up on me. Right, but if the six seed wins,
okay, but they
if
don't.
If the six seed beats the three seed in the playoffs,
why
the number one gets the six seed. If the three seed wins, then the two seed plays them. Of course, that's right.
Well, I know for a fact they don't do it in March Madness, and that's how you end up with
that's
13, 12
why I
matchups.
Think, that's why I think
and
that
it's great.
Tournament stinks.
No, you're completely wrong. You're completely off base.
Guys, by the way, we have Steve Smith calling in pretty soon. He's back.
Oh, we do,
He's
eh?
Back.
All right. Excellent. Steve Smith, yeah, new loot in his a whole bunch of
a lot
fresh
of news
money
for him. Yeah, he's got a new contract, the Clippers.
While we wait for him, so I was in Hawaii. I'd never been there before, and as you would expect,
so we just dropped
it.
Our mock draft?
Oh, we've dropped – well, I was talking about – well, because Steve Smith's calling in, and I also like to talk about me. That don't you understand that?
All right.
I like to talk
You're
about
You're in Hawaii. Why were you in Hawaii? Tell everybody.
David Feeney, Got married, my chum, you know, my old podcast partner, David Feeney, from Daves of Thunder. And a lot of people were, you know, on the Twitter, at Damashek, they dropped me a line to wish him well. And you can follow Rank, at Adam Rank. Black Tide, did you create your Twitter account specific to this show?
Not yet. What I did, I just added.
How busy can you be that you can't
take? I just added Black Tide to my profile. I didn't create a new.
You. Well, because I shamed you, right, on Twitter?
Well, I'm taking it step by step. I don't like the idea of having two Twitter accounts. I don't know. We'll see.
Okay, well, what are you most famous for? You being you or you being Black Tie on the show?
Me being me. Huh?
No, that's not true.
Bunk. Bunk.
We'll see. We'll see.
So, yes. So I made my way out to Hawaii, and I took a bath in the sea. You know how I like to do that. And the water there is so crisp and clear. I've never seen anything like it. You can imagine. I swooned.
Because you were in Maui. You weren't.
I went to Maui. Yeah.
Right.
I was in Maui. And
on Feenster's dime too, which is pretty magnanimous.
Yeah, but let me tell you something. I mean, of course, and I tweeted out photos of me, you know, doing various things.
Of course, I
drank straight from a pineapple, right? That's right. I drank a Mai Tai out of a pineapple. I didn't care. People said that's a girl drink. I said, you know what? Bring me six more over the course of the next hour or two. I had them all.
And you wash it down with a Corona Light.
A Lava Flow, is that the drink?
The Lava Flow, yeah.
It's like half strawberry daiquiri and half some.
Like it's half pina colada with the red. Yeah,
is that what it is?
I think so.
That's why I loved it so much.
Yeah, back when
I covered
the Pro Bowl a couple of years ago, and Vic Carucci and I were knocking those back.
Oh, just heaven.
That's what you do in Hawaii. Yes, that's fine.
All right, guys. Steve is on now.
All right, but I'm talking about taking my dip in the sea. I didn't. When you go in the sea, let me just tell you, when you go in the Pacific, it's magical and medicinal. Mm-hmm. I went in there. I didn't just wash off as usual. You don't just wash off the day's soils, but you wash off all of society's ills when you go in the Pacific Ocean. I emerged, baptized, a new man.
Where is Steve Smith to save us?
I don't know. Steve Smith, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I don't know if you just heard, but I'm a new man now, and you're a new man, too, or with the new contract. Mazel tov to you, sir.
No, I appreciate it. Same guy, though. Same guy.
Are you the same guy now?
Oh, same guy.
All right. Well, listen, let's get into it. Well, first of all, yeah, congratulations on that. And then secondly, the first concern is, before we get into the Carolina Panthers upcoming draft, what do you make of this? Cam Newton is one of the finalists to be on the cover of the Madden video game. This is bad news. You don't want him on the cover, right?
You know, I think being on the cover of a video game is, you know, it's a pretty big deal, you know. Growing up, you know, you wanted to be on ESPN and all those things. And then when you attach football, as long as football is going on, you know, video games and football have been synonymous. You know, high impact Mike Ditka, Joe Montana on Sega, you know, Madden, you know. So you had all these games. That they've always had players on there. So, you know, for a guy to get on there, I think people don't understand how much it actually means to the player. That's one of those accolades that very few people get, but so many people envy as well.
Yeah, it'd be awesome, except for the fact that over the last decade, it's no good. It puts a pox on the guy on the cover. You don't want that as a Panther.
No, me though, but somebody has to break it, so why not give the opportunity?
All right, that's an interesting. That's a good attitude. I like that. All right, lots to talk about with the Clippers and the draft coming up and everything. What do you make of the latest news? I don't know that we've gotten your opinion on the bounty scandal in New Orleans, and now this news this week that Mickey Loomis allegedly was listening from the box to opposing coaches. What do you make of all this stuff from your division foe?
Well, I find interesting is how individuals are saying, where's the evidence, this and that, and then these stories keep coming out, you know, and it's like, oh, wow, why, and then you got a documentary that was recorded, and then it was saying, well, I never gave you permission. And, you know, it's you know, when things like this happen, it's a snowball effect. And once it comes and it breaks, you know, it's pretty much a runaway train, and there's nothing you can do about it. And eventually, until it hits something, and I think it's starting to hit a few cars and trucks on the way that's stuck on the track, and pretty soon, I think it's going to be something else that comes out that finally kind of puts it at the, you know, puts it on the forefront. It's like, look, the intentions were malice. The intentions weren't quote unquote innocent. And that's how it is. And you can put lipstick on her. You can put makeup on her. And she's still on it. She's laying in the mud. She's still a pig, you know. And that's what's going on.
Was this something when this came out? Was this something you had always suspected the Saints were doing, or did this kind of catch you off guard?
I've always knew Greg Williams and his defenses would do that. He's done that actually, I actually had an altercation with a guy who told me firsthand, because I was going out of bounds, a guy went for my ankle. I said, hey, man, you know, cut that out. He's like, well, we get fined if we don't go after your legs when you go out of bounds. I said, oh, okay. And actually this past year, you know, this last game when we played him, you know, I had a little conversation with Greg Williamson, and I would say same of kind of what he did, the stage he took last time, which is he takes full responsibility. You know, he took responsibility. He was saying it wasn't right, but that's who he was, and that's who he is. And, you know, you got to take people for their pros and cons, you know, their minuses and weaknesses, strength and weaknesses. So that's who he was. That's who he is. He's standing by that. That's how he's always coached. That's probably how he will always coach some version of it, even if it's watered down. And you got to expect and understand that's who you're getting when you hire that person.
Wait a second, though. But what you're saying is one step more. You're saying that the DB who went at your ankle said, we actually get fined if we don't do that.
Correct.
Wow, that's even more. And I remember you had that scrape in the Superdome early in the season with a couple of Saints DBs. Was that did it stem from something that you thought was a late hit?
No, I just think it's bad blood, you know. A guy told me, you know, well, he's just, you always talk and then he gets, you know, you get on his nerves, you know, and it's like, and that was his response. And I just kind of was like, oh, okay. You know, it's kind of one of those, you know, I equate it to this like roadway. Somebody cuts you off, so you go over there and egg their car, but that's okay. You know, so, you know, I just always look at it like, look, if you don't like it, stop me. You know, and if you can't stop me, then that sounds like a personal problem that you need to sit down and talk to someone to get over it. Because obviously, 12 years and running now, it seems to be working for me.
Well, who is this? You're not going to expose this guy, or do you want to? Who is this guy who said this? You're going to keep
I'm
it?
Not say.
All but right. Why did interesting.
It, why did it take so long for it to get out? Because it seems like it was something that was known. How come it took so long for people to find out about this?
Well, this is what happens. You always give a guy incentives. You know, you always got to tell a guy, hey, if you tackle inside, you know, this and that. But, you know, everybody does their thing differently. Everybody does it differently. And they were obviously doing it in a way that wasn't really kind of how everybody else does it. You know, and the reason I say everybody does it, everybody wants and has goals. Whether they're incentive-based or just getting a sticker on your helmet or getting in ours, what we call a Panther thing, just to say, hey, we've accomplished it. These are the goals we want to be in 2000X. We want to make sure we hold an offense within 21 points. You know, it just to, you know, because if you do that and you have if you have offensively less turnovers and defensively more turnovers, then, you know, ultimately if you have a good defense, that'd be in the top five. And if you're in the top five, free agents and players want to come to that team. You know, so things like that, you always got to have goals. Without a plan, you know, you're deemed to repeat yourself. So you always have to have a plan no matter what you're doing. So I think that is good. But taking a step up where you're finding guys if they don't take shots, I think that's a little You know, I think that's more of a power trip and, you know, trying to be what you couldn't be, which is a top flight player. And now you're a coach.
What is the buzz looking ahead to 2012 now? Of course, draft coming up here. Everything I've read and heard over the last few months is that you guys are going to go defense. No surprise with Ron Rivera there with his you know, his background in defense and trying to fix that side of the ball. Is that your expectation? They're going to go D-line, which is what people seem to be projecting?
You never know in a draft. I can honestly say you would systematically say the defense versus the offense of the Carolina Panthers was a big glaring discrepancy. So I would say that is not hard to guess. What actually happens on draft day, nobody ever knows, because a team that's supposed to pick this team doesn't, that person doesn't pick, and teams start trading and all that stuff. So who would have thought the Minnesota Vikings 2 years in a row was scheduled to be number X and then screwed up the pick 2 years in a row. So, you know, anything can happen. What was that last year? Who was that? Baltimore and Chicago screwed up a trade, mm-hmm. so it didn't mm-hmm. work out. You know, so things happen. And, you know, and once you put any person under that timer, you know, people panic and make the wrong mistakes, which is pretty typical in high-pressure situations.
What if they trade it? What if we heard Carolina Panthers trade Steve Smith to the Indianapolis Colts for the first overall draft pick there? Could happen.
That happening would be probably as likely as me waking up in a month and I'll be 6'2".
Well, what? How are you spending the off season? Yeah, I hope you're not torturing yourself by going to Bobcat games.
Unfortunately, you know, we've been to a few, but you know, I've just been, you know, kids are, I'm coaching my youngest son in flag football at the local YMCA, so I'm enjoying coaching. He's enjoying playing, first year ever playing, so that's pretty good. And observing my 14-year-old do pretty good on the soccer field, and my daughter, she does competitive dance, so watching her and just being a dad and enjoying it, which sometimes I don't get to do during the season because I just can't get off. So it's always a great opportunity to catch up.
I didn't know that they had, you say, competitive dancing. I remember that in the early 80s. You were around. You're a little younger than I am, but you remember the movies when they would break dance fight. Did you ever get in one of those?
No.
You never did that?
I was on the basketball, baseball, football field. You know, I was always in some kind of sport.
How about you, Rank? Did you ever have like a break into electric boogaloo kind of fight against your rival?
Never had that.
Yeah, it's always weird. The aggression that would bring out. We'll talk about your favorite team, the LA Clippers. What do you think is the playoffs draw nigh?
I think they're good. You know, since losing, you know, big shot Chauncey Billups, our bench is struggling. You know, that's really, you know, when Mo, he's hot, he's hot. When he's cold, you know, you might as well put me out there. You know, Blake, he gotta get tough, man. They got too many guys taking shots at him. He's getting up. You know, he's going to have to do something to kind of let those guys know that that isn't acceptable, because they're taking shots at him, you know, every other night, and he's kind of, you know, turning the other cheek. And he's eventually going to get injured if he doesn't kind of establish, especially when the playoffs come, the intensity level raises up. And, you know, I just remember that kid from Smith from the Hornets, you know, taking him out. You know, I wasn't really as a fan, I was kind of shocked to see he just kind of walked away. You know, he didn't really do much about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it seems like some of the other teams are starting to step up. You know, Ron Artest got a little chippy recently.
Who?
Oh, sorry, Meta World Peace got a little chippy. And you saw the Heat where Dwayne Wade actually shoved Rip Hamilton in the ground. Do you want it? Do you like to see that?
That was a screen. That was a screen. It wasn't a shove. It was a screen. He had his arms folded. He just wasn't expecting it, and he was a little traumatized after. But, yeah, you know, it was a legal screen.
That was LeBron, but Dwayne Wade actually went up and shoved Rip Hamilton.
Yes.
But what about the world peace, the ironically named world peace?
I watched it first because I didn't know what anybody was buzzing about. And then I watched, I was like, when he threw the elbow, if you're in the stands, you just kind of shake your head and go, at some point it was going to happen.
I agree with you completely. This was waiting to happen. And to show how ridiculous he is, his defense after the fact is, I didn't even know he was there. What? How's that possible? He was touching you. Your bodies were against one another. What do you mean you didn't know he was there? It's loco.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Throwing that elbow at the head.
Yeah, but do the Clippers need to show a little bit of that attitude, though? I mean, maybe not going that far, but, I mean, do you want to see a little life out of them?
They have to, because if they're going to go into the playoffs, teams are going to, every team, I don't care what sport you play, every team is deemed as something. You know, when you play, you think about the Miami Heat, the New York Knicks. Oh, that's a physical series. It always has been since I was a kid. You know, the Detroit Pistons and the Los Angeles, Lakers or whatever, they were always, up there. It was always chippy. You know, there are teams that when you know they play, it's going to be interesting and physical. And I think the flip side of the coin, there are teams that are considered finesse. I gave you a great example is, the Utah Jazz back in the day, Karl Malone, Jeff Hornacek, and John Stockton, all those guys, they were a finesse team, but then when they played the Trailblazers or play Houston Rockets, they would get out physical, and those are the differences. You look at those old established teams that are guys that are great sitting on TNT and TBS sitting on all these games. They were known for physical players, and that's why they were great teams for such a long time.
Well, who's going to come out of the Western Conference? Thunder looking good, Spurs. Obviously, there again, nobody likes us. Nobody ever talks. They are the most underappreciated. I know people, this is an old story, but they really are. In sports, the Spurs, is there any team in sports that's consistently been good over a decade that nobody ever talks about? It's crazy.
Because they just come in and they just get to work. They don't, Tim Duncan, he's just real quiet. He plays a phenomenal technical game since he's been in college, and he just gets his work done, and that's just kind of how they are.
Well, who's going to do it? Is it going to be one of those two teams, the Lakers? Do the Clippers have any chance?
I think who's going to really make a push is the Thunder and the Spurs. I think whoever can ultimately come out of there is going to play, before they get to the championship, a surprise team. I think the final four teams are going to, on the East, are going to be standard. Mm-hmm. But I think on the West it's going to be either the Thunder, Lakers, or Spurs, and then a surprise team that everybody was like, wow.
Like maybe Dallas rises up or something?
Not Dallas.
I was going to say, because I was watching last year when the Lakers were going through the motions in a way against the Mavericks. They look like they're on borrowed time, and it looks like the Oklahoma City Thunder is on the verge of turning that around. And even though the Lakers were victorious on Sunday, I think over a 7-game series, I think the Thunder takes that. I think the Thunder are going to the finals.
Well, the worst thing about
the Thunder can, because they have a well-rounded shooting team, not just threes and long distance, but just getting to the hole, penetrating, dishing off. They run the floor. All five run the floor. The thing that will separate the Thunder, imagine a Thunder that could get a guy like, I know he won't go, but like an Anthony Davis. You imagine Anthony Davis on the Thunder or Tim Duncan. It just, they can run and slow the game down. And with the teams that can do that, That's why Shaq was such a dominant player, leaving Hakeem Olajuwon. When you have teams with big men that can run and then speed the game up, slow it down, the transition is hard to figure out, and half the time, by the time you figure it out, oh, you swept, or it's game six and it's too late.
Well, the main thing is we can't have, as an NBA, we can't have the Thunder and Heat play each other in the finals because of those two terrible names. It'd be the all-weather finals. Don't you think the Thunder should change their name? I've come up with two, Thunderbolts or Twisters.
No, I like the Thunder. It's nice.
No, it has to end in S. It's a professional sports team. It's got to end in an S, Steve Smith.
Well, you need to tell their owner that, who bought the name.
I know. Well, I don't like that. And that's why people need to listen to me more. And with you behind me, I might have a better chance of getting something done here.
No, I just gave you a small suggestion. I wasn't behind you.
I know. I said that's why I'm wounded, and that's why I bid you good day, sir. All right, Steve Smith. Listen, we'll let you go. Good luck to the Panthers with the upcoming draft there. Hopefully, they'll get you. I'll tell you, man. You've certainly played with some good receivers over the years there. But boy, it would be nice to see you get someone on the other side so that you're not constantly blanketed by double coverage as you and Cam Newton move forward here.
Well, I have complete confidence, you know, in the game plan that they have that I got a sneak preview of. And, you know, they have a lot of, you know, plan A, B, C, and D if this guy is taken or not taken. So, you know, but when you go to Vegas, you know, you roll the dice, but you never know what's going to pop up until you actually get on the table and see. And I think that's where they are. Carolina and every other team, you know. I think like a team like Miami, you know, all the buzz about Miami, who they might take, but until they actually physically take them and trade up and move this guy and move that guy, you know, who knows?
And it was in that sneak preview, did the name Alshon Jeffrey come up?
Who is that?
Wide receiver out of South Carolina. He's a Gamecock.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't have a lot of good speed to me. I actually watch film all the receivers on Floyd. Still needs to sharpen his tools. Right from Baylor, he's a speed guy, but can he run precise routes that transitions into successful routes in the NFL? That spread offense does two things to a wide receiver. It makes him look very good, and it hides his weaknesses. Spread offense, you just go to the area, sit down, or take off running. So that's the thing. The guy from South Carolina, he's not as fast as he thinks. He has good hands. He's a possession guy. But he's not a guy who, when you're saying 3 years from now, three or 4 years from now, when I say, hey, I'm done, is that the guy you want lined up that there's, quote-unquote, say, when free agent comes, there's nobody on the other side? You think that's the guy you want lined up as your number one receiver?
Interesting point. And the other thing is three or four more years. You're going to be 16 years in the big league?
I'm going to try. You know, a three-year deal. Well, it's a five-year deal, but realistically, I 3 years, if I'm healthy, maybe take that fourth, but if not, I want to walk away and walk away because I have some things lined up that I'm going to do that I'm pretty excited when football's over. I have something to do that I really have a passion and heart for that I'm excited to start. I've just started on the brinks of it right now, so it's exciting. I'm enjoying it.
It sounds like scouting could be in your future. So you're talking about the receivers. Who's the best one coming out in this draft?
Film-wise, quote-unquote, they're all kind of pretty even because they're all athletic. They all can run. If you watch enough film on anybody and you poll enough people, you can get enough people to go against you or agree with you. So it's kind of hard, but I wouldn't really say any of those guys would be a number one guy right now with the average quarterback that you want to start building your team around. I don't believe any of those guys are Calvin Johnson or Larry Fitzgerald who you can have them in there, the quarterback play be average, and you still are happy with the product on the field. I don't think those guys are there.
I agree with you, but I will say this. You know who Justin Blackmon is? Santonio Holmes. That's who he's going to be in the NFL, and I think most teams would like to get that in the first round. If I told you you could get Santonio Holmes in the first round, I think most teams would be happy about that.
I think so, too. But I think Justin Blackmon needs to focus on being the best Justin Blackmon, not the next Santonio Holmes. Because when you start naming guys after players, there's things that they knock Jerry Rice on for not doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and look how he turned out. Not bad for him.
No, he had a good career, if I recall correctly. So, yeah.
Hey, I think so, too. This is just a shot in the dark, but I think he had an okay career.
All right, Steve Smith, we'll let you go. And, by the way, be on the lookout. We're going to be talking about the top 100 players currently. Love to catch up with you on that, Steve Smith, as we get deeper into that. Did you vote on that this season?
Yeah, I voted on it. They asked me. I voted on it, and it was kind of a – well, what do you think about this guy? What do you think about that guy? What about a potential? And I'm like, you know, I just find it interesting how we focus so more on what a guy would be projected ahead, and yet we don't want to talk about where he is right now.
All right, listen, Steve Smith, delightful as always to yap with you. Continue to enjoy your off season, and maybe we'll catch up with you in the next few weeks to discuss as we get in deeper into this top 100 Jazz and see what your thoughts are on the Panthers draft once it's all said and done.
Okay, appreciate it.
All right, man, and maybe if the Clippers are still in it, then we'll really have something to talk about.
Did you say if?
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, we'll talk about them in the conference finals going up against the Thundersticks.
How about that, huh? If that were to happen, I'm telling you right now, you can't tell me nothing. I'm going to L.A., and I'll be in the first row.
And we'll be right next to you.
No, I'll have to fight between – it'll be a fight between my beautiful wife and my firstborn son, who thinks they're going. But I know I got me a seat.
He doesn't. All right. Well, we'll debate that later. But if they're playing the Oklahoma State Twisters or slash Thunderbolts, that'll be great. All right, then. All right. Steve Smith, be well. Congratulations on the contract, too, again.
Thank you.
There he goes, the great Steve Smith. And you know what? I think we've covered a lot of ground here between Charlie Casserly, an insider, an executive perspective, now a player's perspective, and then two boobs like you and me. I think we've got every angle covered here, right?
Yeah, we got it nailed.
All right, I hope you have. I hope you're ready for the draft. And is there anything, final thoughts? I know I cut us off a little early. We only got five deep in the actual draft. But is there any issue you want to hit?
No.
There's nothing else we need to cover?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. We'll review what happened after. That's more important. I'll be in New York City in the coming days to take care of another one of those Cars.com pieces, the NFL fans' ultimate road trip.
Oh,
I'm going
good.
Out there to see. And one guy is going to be selected to have his name announced at the draft. That's
oh,
pretty
cool.
Cool, right?
Yeah, that's a pretty good deal.
Now, there's another thing where you can another NFL promotion out there where you can announce a draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
I said fat to that.
No.
Announce a draft pick. How about have your name called out? Have your name back, get to hold the jersey up. I think a little bit cooler. Speaking of things to take a look at, DaveDamashek.NFL.com. We've got a new NFL for you. It's a draft edition. It's what if Andrew Luck had come out a season earlier in 2011. Mm. How would that have changed things and rejiggered the way everything looks now? Cam Newton wouldn't have been a Panther. That's all I'll tell you. Go look at that at NFL.com. Also, based on our conversation last week about who would win a fight among the fantasy guys on NFL, I was pleasantly surprised how many people, I said this will be a challenge to see how many people listen to the very end of the podcast.
Yes.
All sorts of tweets suggest that we have many people who stick with us to the last minute of the show.
Black Tie was very chagrined by the overwhelming response, who not only said that Adam Rank would win these fights, but just responded and said, down with the tight 45.
Tight 45 minutes is what Black Tie wants out of our podcast every week. Well, I also did what if the NFL mascots had the same sort of thing. They had fisticuffs among the all the mascots in the NFL, and you can look at that at DaveDamashek.NFL.com. Plus, Rank's pick six columns are coming fast and furious these days, so be on the lookout for that. Quickly, did you agree with my mascot rankings?
You did have a couple ones that I wasn't.
I had the Titan number one because I figure that's a Greek god.
And yeah. So he's a Greek god, is magic, isn't he? And
he is, yeah, but is he going to be able to beat a giant? Like, how big's the giant?
He's got thunderbolts.
How giant's
and stuff.
The giant?
Take that, giant. I'll knock you down with my thunderbolt. Zeus is my friend. You know, you don't got nothing on me, giant. So, anyway, look that up if you want to evaluate that and weigh in. Much obliged for that. Black Tie, nice job tracking down those two fellows for us. And thanks to Casserly and Steve Smith.
As
Rank, go ahead.
Handsome Hank's not here, but he would say, well, good.
Oh, yeah, we didn't talk to Handsome Hank this week. Quickly, what is the number we got to do here? We do, because last week we did episode 63, but we didn't announce a winner there.
Right.
63, of course, would go to Fats Holmes, right?
Wait, it wouldn't go to Gene Upshaw?
Fats Holmes. Fats Holmes and Gene Upshaw, who collided in those interior collisions back in the 70s when the Raiders and Steelers used to play. I think we go Fats Holmes. He's more interesting.
You think so?
Yeah. He threw a couple rounds up at a helicopter once.
Over the Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Well, all right. You want to go Upshaw? We'll go Upshaw. 64, though? Then who do we go Upshaw? We go Steve Furness, number 64. Great, another great defensive. As a matter of fact, took over for Fats Holmes, if I'm not mistaken, or at least is one of the guys who helped take over for Fats Holmes.
Wait,
when
we
he
did.
Moved on.
I would say, though, but what about Jerry Kramer? One of the best guys.
Oh, Jerry Kramer, right.
One of the best players, they say, not in the Hall of Fame.
Ah, listen, get Casserly in here to tell you why he was a better. If he was so great, why is he not? Although, I will say, it seems like he should be, since should be in the Hall of Fame, since he was one of the linchpins to the power sweep for
yeah,
the Packers, right?
And you had Hacksaw Reynolds was another guy.
Mm-hmm.
You also had Randall McDaniel.
Yeah.
64, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
some,
right.
Some decent 64s. But, yeah, Jerry Kramer seems like the guy to
all
go
right,
with.
Kramer. And so we covered two in one shot here. We got Fats Holmes, 63. 64 is Jerry Kramer. That's what we're going to go with. See,
okay.
Don't call me biased.
I won't call you biased.
I didn't force that it had to be Steelers in there.
So what did we do? By the way, did we do 44 minutes? Have we reached that,
is that
point?
Did we do a tight 45 here, Black Tie?
No. We're in an obese 76.
You know
76.
What?
Obese, he calls it.
Watch this, too, and I will tell you, because I know one of the guys who tweets both of us, his name's Neil Dutton. He always, he's one of the ones who tells you in particular to go spit on the tight 45, and his sister, Nikki Dutton. It's her birthday today on Tuesday.
Ah.
So I will say, you know what, just to show again that people listen the whole time. Happy birthday to Nikki Dutton. She will tweet you.
Oh.
And you will be chagrined.
Since we're giving shout-outs here, a little business. I just covered it all. But one last thing is that we have Backpage Press, our pals over at Backpage Press, who've generated. You can track them down, backpagepress.com. Mm-hmm. They've created in the past a T-shirt for people who are dopey enough to listen to me, the Czech Republic. You can get those T-shirts, all manner of sports T-shirts, though, and beyond. Now, the latest thing is they have some great Mario Lemieux T-shirts, too, by the way, glorious T-shirts, a trio of them, one of which I designed. And but now the newest one, they've gone too far.
They've gone too far?
You know the term jump the shark. I think that's what they've done.
Oh, how dare you.
They've created one for the rank amateurs.
That's
I don't know that it's
a joke.
I don't think it's out there yet for purchase for the one or two people who might be interested in that, but be on the lookout for that.
The one or two people. You know what? You
always
know,
good work from the back
the
page
first
press.
Person, the first person to sign up and buy one will be Dieter Brock.
Oh, finally. There's another one. Get that ding in there. Nice job there, Rank. And Corey, nice job on the design. And all right, Casserly, Smith, Black Tie, Rank, and you, the Czech Republic / Rank Amateurs, will be in New York City to cover the draft. We'll yap with you on the other side of it. Look out for our first of the top 100, the NFL Network's debut of this season's top 100 NFL players. That hits the air Sunday night, and then we're going.
Was it Saturday?
Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday. And so
Saturday
be on
the
lookout for a podcast like we did last year where that will do we'll cover our opinions. Unfiltered.
Unfiltered.
Yeah. No question is out of bounds. All right.
Except some stuff.
We'll be back for more Huey and Applesauce later on. But in the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.